time for a few from the north, though more recently he was very west. You can catch his work. Comcast Sportsnet, CSNNW.com. He's Talking Ducks on Comcast Sportsnet, channel 737 in high def on your Comcast Xfinity system. On Twitter, you can find him via the handle Aaron J. Fentress. We welcome back Mr. Fentress. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So is it like a family destination, or was that a maiden voyage for the Fentress clan to Hawaii?
That was a maiden voyage and the beginning of many.
You just
Maui is life.
I was like, normally I don't live vicariously, but I'm like, I'm checking in on this dude every hour. You seem like you're having the best time ever.
It was awesome. I'm that guy who, if you overhype something too, he's gonna go into it with an attitude. Like, I'm gonna be like looking for something. It ain't that great. But, yeah, Hawaii lived up to it and then some.
So, first of all, didn't even know you played golf. I saw you out there in Maui.
I wouldn't call what I do playing golf.
Well, I know my producer has golfed Maui, and we were like, well, what course did you play, and how tough was it?
It was Kapalua, I think it was. It was really tough. It was there was tons of sand and crazy hills. Like, you'd be standing at the tee box, and you couldn't see what was going on the other side. But the carts had these flyover programs. You could fly over the hole and sort of see it before you played it. It was pretty cool. Yeah, very, very treacherous and hilly. But I actually played, like, I mean, I was bad. Like, I'm always bad. But I actually had, like, three legit bogeys, which for me, usually it takes, like, 8 rounds of golf to get 3 bogeys. So to get a bogey on one of the toughest courses I've ever played, let alone 3, was amazing.
And more importantly, I learned something. There's such a thing as snuba diving.
Yes.
So you got to share that experience and be honest. Did you hear the Jaws music in your head the whole time?
Jaws is my favorite movie of all time, so I'm programmed anytime I'm near any body of water to look for a shark. But so it's a combination of snorkeling and scuba diving. And so instead of snorkeling, obviously, you're at the surface. But in this, you're hooked up to, you have a true oxygen mask in your mouth, tube in your mouth, and it's hooked up to a long tube to a combination tank raft up top, 2 people per raft. And it goes down like maybe it was 15 feet, and then, but you're not wearing a scuba tank, and so they call it snuba for snorkeling scuba. And so you couldn't go down as far as you wanted because you were attached to this thing, but so a little safer, but it was really cool. There was a moment when I was floating in the water, and I saw this little tropical fish was just swimming right at me like he was checking me out. And I thought he was going to come with me so I could touch him. And then he just took off. It was really cool. I didn't see any turtles, though, damn it.
I'm glad you guys had a great time. That was awesome. All right, let's get back on land. In your absence, more trials and tribulations for Oregon football. We know the details. David Reeves gets a Dewey, reckless driving. He's going to lose his job. Another coach in the passenger seat. You wrote an interesting piece on the CSNNW site. So how maybe we should be looking at Willie Taggart here, maybe moving forward?
Well, we're sort of in a pile-on society. When something goes wrong, we look for multiple people to blame. And a lot of times I think we blame people for things that really are beyond their control. You could make the argument that, well, Taggart hired him. Well, yeah, Taggart hired him, but I can't imagine Taggart hired him knowing that he had a history of doing things that stupid. I mean, if he did, then you could blame him, I guess. But the bottom line is, for me, David Reeves is a 38-year-old married man with a couple kids. He should know better. And we don't know the whole circumstances beyond everything. I don't even think we even know what he blew on the breathalyzer. I don't think that's come out yet. But it's just unfortunate that he made that decision, and it backfired. And maybe he thought, you know, heck, I'm fine, I can drive, and then he gets pulled over, and you think, well, they're going to let me go because I'm the new offensive coordinator at Oregon. Where in some cities, that would be the case, but here, nah, not really. Yeah, they don't really turn their back so much on things that Oregon players and coaches do wrong, which I think they shouldn't. So, you know, to me, that can't be blamed on Taggart. And then the whole thing with the strength coach, you know, I spoke with him at length while I was in Maui and did a long article based on his version of everything, and I ran by everything he told me by a couple player sources and parent sources and who corroborated things, and it didn't seem to be as bad or sinister as it was being made out to be nationally. Now, only the three players in question who were hospitalized could maybe talk for sure, but as Tiger pointed out to me, you know, guys were told, if you can't finish, stop. And a lot of guys stopped. These guys kept going and finished it, and maybe they shouldn't have. And so how do you place blame in that situation? And then, you know, the support the player showed on social media and a couple I talked to for the new strength coach, Odor Ende. That's right. Odor
Ende. Yeah, right.
I've been working on it for a couple of weeks. So I'm not getting right. But the outpouring of support was just amazing. And some people have said, well, maybe they're supporting him publicly because they want to make a good, you know, impression on the new coaches. Well, the guys who were the most vocal on social media were our guaranteed starters. You know, Carrington, Springs, Amadi, Crosby, Troy Dye. I mean, I don't think those guys are trying to get in good with the coaches to get starting jobs, because if they're not starting, the team's going to go 0-12. Right? So, you know, and from what I understand, the players who went to the hospital still support the strength coach. So it was just an unfortunate situation. So it was 10 days of definitely bad news for the program. I think it'll all blow over in the long run. I think sometimes people like to get really agitated in the short term and not think about the bigger picture. And I think the bigger picture will be that as long as there isn't a continuing series of these types of things happening, that everything will be blown over and fine, as long as they have a good recruiting class in the solid spring.
Yeah, the bottom line is, as usual, there's an element who says it's cut and dry without having been there and no facts. But we continue with Aaron Fentress, who's easily the greatest snuba diver we've ever had on the program. another topic you hit on was Rob Mullins. Safe to say, this is not only now on his radar, but encapsulates the entire screen, because, let's face it right now, it was his decision to clean house and bring in Coach Taggart. So this is kind of a defining circumstance for him moving forward.
Yeah, I mean that's sort of what you buy into when you do something like that. When you clean out everybody, a very successful staff to boot, a staff you really had nothing to do with. I mean, you know, Mullins had nothing to do with the success of the football program at all, but he had the power to dismantle it. And by dismantling it and getting rid of so many, you know, beloved coaches and guys who achieved so much success, you know, he now puts everything squarely on his shoulders, and clearly he's, you know, man enough and professional enough and confident enough to do that. But every misstep that happens, you focus on him. And I think now he did decide to keep Helfrich, but, you know, that was sort of like a you kind of have to situation, I thought, and everything sort of fell on Helfrich. Okay, Helfrich, you're given the shot, and everything falls on you if it goes wrong because you're taking over what Kelly did. Well, now everything falls on Mullins and or the millionaires or billionaires who helped him make these decisions.
Yeah.
It's sort of, it all points to them. So if Taggart doesn't work out, if he goes 6-6 the next 3 years in a row, well, we all know what's going to happen with the boy Taggart. He's going to be fired, but then all eyes are going to point to those who made the decision to dismantle everything that had been built because of one bad season 2 years removed from going to the national championship game, which is the line I will always keep saying until the end of time, because I think it means a lot. I've heard from some, you know, inside people that, yeah, he's not very, very happy right now with how things have been going. It doesn't look good. But again, you know, is it Rob Mullins' fault that this coach did this? No. Is it Rob Mullins' fault that this strength coach maybe push these guys a little too hard, or that maybe there was a miscommunication on whether they could quit or not or what have you, and that three guys went to the hospital? No. I mean, that would be unfair. But I think the big picture grand scheme of things, when it's all said and done, when Willie Taggart's tenure at Oregon is over, that's going to all be, you know, fall on Mullins' big decision, so it all falls to him. So I'm sure he can't be too happy right now.
I think that we could paint that as consensus.
Here's the irony, though. Let me point this out. So the Oregon did a big feature on some of the problems that were going on with the players, things that pretty much most people who covered the team knew about, and Andrew Greif did a great job of fleshing it out and doing a big story. Well, in the story, he quotes Mullins. So Mullins was more than happy to go on record to say, you know, things he knew was going on in the program under Helfrich that weren't right with some of the players here and there and blah, blah, blah. But he's nowhere to be found right now when the coaching staff that, you know, he hired a head coach who put together a coaching staff, and they have three people in the hospital, and they have a coach fired who was driving with another coach after being busted with a DUI. All we've got now are statements. So I want him to come out and answer questions about what's going on now like he did when he was throwing people under the bus, I think, in that article, looking back on the minor little things that were going on. And the things that were going on under the Helfrich's last year are things that go on everywhere, but they didn't survive them because they were young and they were immature and they had tons of injuries. But if they were gone 9-3 last year, no one would have cared. And I'm sure some of those stupid little things happened in other years when they won 10 games. It's just that it was magnified this past season, so people use it to pile on Helfrich. But yeah, it's always interesting when things come back to bite you and the backside later on. And this is kind of coming back to bite a little bit, but no overall judgment right now. We're just 2 months into the new Tiger regime.
All right. How about we hit hoops? Since that amazing
good news.
Since what?
Good news.
Yeah. Since that amazing finish against UCLA, man, they've just trashed five teams. You know, Dylan Brooks didn't play in the Stanford romp. You were talking with Richard Lucas on Talking Ducks. By the way, Richard Lucas in 1990 was an intern on my FM morning show. So
nice.
Just unbelievable. You were talking about the 19 turnovers in the Stanford game, but you made an interesting point. The number wasn't really as important as to kind of when they happened.
Well, on Saturday night's post-game show, I was, you know, I had to throw some, you know, salt on everyone's game. They're all excited about the big win. I had to find something. And I knew Auburn would talk about it because that's how Auburn rolls. You know, Auburn's the kind of coach who's going to walk away from that game going, we had 19 turnovers. Forget we won by 20 or whatever it was.
Right.
So I brought that up. And they made the point of saying, yeah, but a lot of them won in the second half. So I thought about it. On Tuesday night, I kind of stole that point and made it as well. And it's fair. I mean, we're dealing with college kids. If you're just rolling somebody, it's a dunk contest dang near, you might start to get a little sloppy. I think that's almost human nature because there's no consequence to it. Maybe you're not focused as much as you want. Sometimes the coach wants you to focus every single second, but human nature, especially with, you know, young men, and we all know our brains aren't fully developed until we're 25, you know, they're killing Stanford. And, yeah, they're going to try and do this and that and be a little cuter and be a little bit, take more risk, and then you're going to have more turnovers. So I'll give them a little bit of a pass. I don't think they would have had 12 second-half turnovers if the game were on the line. I think they would have played a tighter game. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. But from a coaching standpoint, you want consistency because you know at some point you're going to face a game like tonight where if you have 12 or whatever turnovers it was in the second half, you're probably going to lose.
All right, I got a couple of final thoughts on hoops. You guys were talking about if Brooks is out, who's the best guy to lean on. Chris Boucher came up. What do you like about kind of all the ways he can hurt you? And you mentioned how you might think he'd fit in as an NBA player.
Yeah, Richard and I agree that sort of all the guys on this team, he has the potential for the most productive NBA career because he can stretch you out and shoot the three, he can block shots. He needs to work on scoring inside a little bit, I would think. But he's going to be someone who's tall, angular, and athletic that the NBA team is definitely going to find a spot on their roster for and hope he can maybe put some weight on and sort of see how he develops. But the fact that he can stand out there at the corner and kill you with the three, and then if you come out on him, he can dribble it by you and dunk in a couple pieces people's faces. And then they also plays defense and has really embraced being more of a big-time rebounder on this team than maybe he was early on the season. Just to me, makes him probably the best all-around talent. I think Dylan Brooks is still your best all-around player and your hub and your guy you're going to revolve around because he's a playmaker in terms of distributing the ball as well, which maybe Boucher doesn't do that as greatly. But, you know, yeah, I think when Brooks is out, Boucher is your go-to guy. But they're built where everyone gets equal opportunity shot attempts. So, and then you funnel to the hottest guy. So if two guys have bad nights, you have two or three other guys have good nights. So I think it's just fascinating to watch on a nightly basis with their team. But I would start with Boucher, knowing that anyone can go off at any moment.
Final thought. You hit on something. You know Altman's focused on it. I've kind of been obsessed with kind of tracking. We know how much skill this team has, athletes, dunks, rim protectors. But this role is because they're playing really good defense, isn't it?
Yeah, they're you know, they've really bought into being more aggressive and better on the perimeter. Richard Lucas loves to talk about the matchup zone, how well they play that. And then the fact that you have, you know, three legitimate big-time shot blockers on your team who can clean up mistakes and who are intimidating and alter shots. And when you can get a bunch of guys who have offensive capabilities like this team does, this team has, you know, six or seven guys that are capable of being, you know, your leading scorer. And the fact, one, they've bought in on the offensive side to not be selfish, and then the fact that all these guys are also buying in terms of knowing they need to play defense, and that Altman is definitely a defensive-minded coach, really is, you know, something to behold and something that makes this team really fun and special to watch. And that ignites, you know, that ignites their transition game, because if they're playing good, solid defense and forcing bad shots and getting rebounds and outletting it out or blocking shots, then you got, I mean, literally on the court at any one moment, you have four guys who can either hit the three or take it to the basket. And when you have that all at one time, they're playing good defense on top of it, it just gives you so many, you know, transition easy baskets. And so, yeah, they're really a fun team to watch. And if they play a team in the tournament where they've got some big inside guys, Oregon can go big, you know, and still be athletic enough where their bigs are, it gives trouble to those other teams' bigs because they're so uniquely athletic for their size.
All right. He is Aaron Snuba Diver Fentress. You can catch his work at CSNNW.com on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. You enjoy the game tonight, the weekend. Always a pleasure, my friend. We'll catch up with you next Thursday.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Take it easy.